Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th. And if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent, working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory need. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Today we have Dr. Rachel Schwartz from the Watson Institute back on the podcast. Her first episode was on body autonomy and was so important and valuable for listeners. I was so thrilled to have her back. And today we are touching on an even more challenging topic that I personally was very excited to hear her answers for. Today we're talking about sexuality education in special education. Now your first reaction to that statement might be, oh my gosh, how do we do that? Why do we do that? We should just avoid this because it's uncomfortable. But as Rachel dives in, we really unpack why this is so critical and so important and how many core foundational skills we should be teaching. She gets into what skills we should teach at what age, how to deal with reluctant staff members, and how to really in general approach this, and especially those more interfering behaviors that are sexual in nature if they're happening in your classroom. So I'm not going to do a long intro because I want you to get right to this episode, and let's go ahead and hear from Rachel. Welcome back to the Autism Helper Podcast. I am so excited to have Rachel Schwartz with us on the podcast for a second time. Welcome back, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I have to tell you, I'm really excited for this interview.
Ooh, I'm excited to do it. I love talking about this.
We have a really good topic, something we haven't talked about on the podcast and I think is really needed. Rachel's last episode on body autonomy was so valuable and needed. And I think this will carry on that kind of same topic really nicely. So today we are talking about sexuality education and whatever, you know, grades, levels you are teaching, whether you're the educator or the parent, this is such an important thing to consider.
Yes, yes, it is. And I think what happens with sexuality education in particular is people end up focusing so much on this being just about sex and pleasure. Yeah. Like, you know, if you tell you sexuality education, oh, that's, you're talking about how to prevent sex, how to have safe sex, or how to just, or you're just scared about it. Like sex doesn't exist.
Yes.
But really, I think it's about intimacy. It's about connection. It's about forming relationships of all kinds and community, friendships, all of that. It's about human development and just understanding your body and understanding how your body changes over time. And for safety as well, just general safety about that's what we touched on with the bodily autonomy. But there are so many components of sexuality education that go way, way beyond pleasure. And often we get stuck in just thinking about it as a very small piece, which is really just a small piece of sexual education, but just thinking about it as something about how you give or receive pleasure, which is not really what all of sexuality education is.
I mean, that was an interesting explanation of how much could be included. Like there's a social skill component, there's a health, there's a science component. There's so many different things that are included in this umbrella.
Oh yes. I mean, this is, and we'll kind of touch on this, I think, more as we talk, but it's really that piece of learning about intercourse or sexual acts is such a small component of a true comprehensive sexuality education curriculum.
So from the perspective of a special ed teacher or special ed clinician, why is this especially important and why is this more challenging?
Well, I think as special educators, we are tasked with building those skills and increasing independence and the self-determination of all of our students. It is impossible to address those goals without addressing components of sexuality education.
Yeah.
Individuals with disabilities experience higher rates of mental, emotional, physical, and sexual abuse than their counterparts without disabilities. So I think the statistic, and this might be from 2018, but it was children with disabilities are 3 times more likely to experience sexual abuse than peers without disabilities.
Wow.
So, that's a very staggering and scary number. So at the very least, to answer your question about kind of why does it matter, it matters because it can help reduce abuse, reduce future charges of any sort of sex crimes. It also can reduce loneliness. Mm-hmm. It can reduce this feeling of isolation that so often happens for individuals with disabilities as they age.
Yeah.
And ideally, it's going to increase those connections, those healthy relationships, and healthy boundaries. So if you're a special education teacher and you're tasked with, hey, how am I going to make everyone says I want to make them as all of our students as independent as possible. I want to make them have the most enriched lives that they can have. Well, you can't do that if you're not safe and if you don't know how to build friendships, relationships, and community.
Yeah, that's true. It's a really good way to think about it. And you're right. We just hear like sex ed. It's like, oh, let's just avoid that. But if we go back to what our true goals are as educators, you really can't avoid it.
No, as much. And I have before in the past, I've been like, I do not want to touch on this. And
I know.
Yeah, it is hard. And you can't walk into it blindly.
Yeah.
You have to walk into it purposefully and in collaboration with all the different stakeholders.
So where do teachers and related service providers fit in this equation on either getting this started, continuing this? Like, where do we fit in here?
Parents are first and foremost the primary sexual educators. Mm-hmm. As a parent, kids are first going to go to you and try to learn about your value system in terms of sexuality education. They're going to be looking at, if you shut them down as a parent or if you say, hey, come talk to me, I want to talk to you about that. That's where they're first going to learn information. So parents always are the first ones fielding those questions. Teachers and related service providers have the opportunity to support those skills in the classroom because there are many competing priorities in special education, and sexuality education is typically not one of those. And so when we're in the classroom, there are a lot of, and we'll talk about those subset of skills that we as educators are already touching on that actually fall into a comprehensive sex ed program. Some of the barriers that we often see with teachers in schools is the lack of teacher preparation. This isn't something we talk about when we're preparing teachers and pre-service teachers to become teachers. There's a lack of teacher knowledge that can lead to fear, concerns, and anxiety around this subject matter. There's the parental anxiety and fear, and really a lack of valid and reliable sexual health education materials for students with disabilities. There are some curriculums that are comprehensive and complete, but there's not a ton. Some are expensive, and a lot of the times you might get the curriculum, but you don't have the training. Mm-hmm. So that can be very, very difficult for teachers to manage.
And for parents too. I mean, I was like, kind of, as you started off with like, oh my gosh, the parents are the first ones. I mean, this is a hard topic. with, you know, with all kids, but adding in that neurodiversity component makes it even more challenging for parents.
Oh, absolutely. I do a lot of parent training right now where we just talk through what we're talking about now. Why is this important? What does it involve? And what can you do? And to help dispel some of the myths that parents might have and often teachers have about sexuality education and people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest myths that I'm sure you've heard is if you teach anyone, and this is for anyone, about sex, they'll run on and have sex.
Yeah.
And that's definitely false.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually happen. In fact, the opposite is usually true.
Yeah.
Another myth that is really specific to special education is that you need to focus on the cognitive age of the child and not the biological. Mm. So that's false. We need to focus on that biological age, but we present information that addresses the cognitive abilities, that addresses how they're going to engage in information and learn information.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a challenge with teaching, you know, language arts, like versus getting to such a complex topic.
Absolutely. We're asking people to understand really abstract concepts mm-hmm. and to distill those down into here are some actions, address those, but more than just yes. And, you know, it's not just yes, do this, no, do that. It's we have all these yes and no behaviors, but on top of that, we have a ton of gray and yeah. need to learn about the context and when to discriminate to do these things.
Yeah.
You know, masturbation is the one I always get questions about. And that's one of those things. It's not, no, you don't do this. It's no, you don't do this here.
Yeah.
We don't do it in the nurse's bathroom. We don't do it in the school bathroom. You can do it at home under these situations. And teaching kids how to discriminate those contexts, it does require a lot of preparation and savviness to make sure that kids can understand that for whatever, however they receive information.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a quick thing to just decide one day, hey, I think I really want to dive into these hard topics. You've got to have some preparation.
Well, and you know, that example that you said on, you know, about masturbation and looking at the real age of the child, not the cognitive age. I'm really curious, you know, that you gave that advice where and when to do that. And as a really young teacher, I learned this very quickly on this was going to be a part of my job. I taught junior high for 10 years. And do you recommend involving parents in those discussions of like how to teach that discrimination? Because I know every family has different rules and beliefs on where and when and all of that.
Yes, you cannot start doing this without explicit conversations with parents, because mm-hmm. what you don't want to do is say, I'm going to work on sex ed with these kids and we're going to talk about privacy, and then have the kid go home and start talking about privacy with their parents and maybe in ways that you're like, wait, what are you talking about? Where did you learn this? And because parents are the primary sexuality educators, you want to make sure that you are aligned in what you are teaching. And or just make them aware, hey, I want to address this topic. This is how I'm going to teach it.
Okay.
There's most districts, most states, depending on the state's laws in regards to sexuality education for kids, you need parental permission anyway for some of this. And they could say, well, I don't want you to talk about STIs, but I do want you to talk about privacy and development. You know, they can kind of go through that. And, you know, and those topics really vary by age, because there's some things that are absolutely inappropriate to talk about with a young child. But when you get adolescents, you're going to want to start discussing this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, let's get into that. What are some topics that are appropriate for different ages?
Well, for young kids, elementary school kids, the biggest topics are body parts and functions, mm-hmm. knowing the real name of everything, because the last thing you need is to confuse a kid by calling parts different weird things. Like,
yes.
I heard some strange stuff. Like, this
Me
is your
too.
Noodle. Like, this is... No.
Oh, my gosh.
So yeah, body parts functions, even body image, starting to use body positivity and just making everyone feel comfortable in their own skin. The need for privacy really increases through elementary school, whereas kids, you know, 3, 4, 5, they're going to barge in on you in the bathroom. They're going to keep the door open in the bathroom and they're going to, you know, they're on the body and you have to remind them, hey, we closed the door. That's going to start to change. So when they're 10, 9 and 10, they're not going to be doing that.
Yeah.
So the focus is being able to communicate yes and no. That's essential for consent. So we need someone to be able to discriminate between yes and no, no, and somehow communicate that. Mm. And being able to identify different relationships from a family to a stranger, a friend, or an acquaintance. And there's, you know, there's circles curriculum. There's a lot of different curriculum that you can use for that. But understanding those different relationships, because that's going to then feed into adolescence, where we talk a little bit more about some of those feelings that you're starting to have, you know, those sexual feelings or interest in others. In adolescence, you have the physical changes of puberty. So we start to really have to dive into hygiene, body odor, all of that. In adolescence, we talk about friendships more, the different levels of friendship. You've established friendships and relationships as young children. How does that evolve in adolescence? What happens when you feel like this person's a friend and then start to get interested in them? What does that look like? That's kind of bringing in those different feelings. So more in-depth relationship discussions. You might start teaching about reproduction, pregnancy, birth. You might start teaching about sexually transmitted diseases and sexual safety. Again, the most important thing in adolescence is still for all kids, and especially kids in special education as well, is to ensure how to give consent, how to make choices, understand privacy and private behaviors. Mm-hmm. And with the consent, it's both to give consent and accept when someone is saying no. So yeah, accepting a no. And that can be across tasks, you know, often, and I'm sure in your experience as a behavior analyst, you've had this too, where we're trying to teach someone to accept you don't get what you want all the time. Mm-hmm. So accepting a no is really an important skill under the umbrella of that sexuality education.
It's so interesting to think about how many skills we work on would fall under this. And to conceptualize that, like, we're already working on these things in the classroom, but have that connection of this is why and this is what it does in the long term. It's pretty cool to think about it that way.
Yeah. I mean, you're already doing – most teachers are already covering this. They might not be covering, for example, you know, contraception in detail or sexual expression in detail. But I guarantee they're working on communication skills, accepting those no's. They're working on hygiene. They're working on all of those other pieces. And they're probably working on the relationships piece, even if they're not working on kind of the next stage of what do you do if you are in a relationship with someone? What are some ways that you physically express that? And again, that's that sexual expression that we might not be hitting that in our lessons that we probably in high school, if they haven't learned that, you know, and most kids stay, you know, till 21, 22, mm-hmm. In PA, they just can stay to their 22nd birthday. So, you know, there's opportunities as they get into high school. So if you have not covered a lot of those, you know, the pregnancies, the reproduction, some of the more details about human development, there's an opportunity to do it at that level.
What recommendations?
A quick question
on high school teachers. Do you recommend that they maybe like collaborate with junior high teachers? You know, you get kids from all different schools, but it would be nice to know, I would assume, as a high school teacher, have they had exposure to this so I know what to teach or what parents have already discussed with teachers? What advice do you have for those high school teachers getting incoming freshmen?
The short answer is yes. Yes to all the above. The ideal is that there is a curriculum or a guide you can go to. You know, I'll send along some resources to have a guide so that you can say, okay, in elementary school, this is what we've worked on and this is where everyone is with us. And then middle school, okay, here, this is what we're trying to work on and here's where they are. And then in high school, you're building up on that curriculum. And because it is really hard when you get a kid, and this often happens, you have those splinter skills, but in terms of this material, you know, if you're getting a kid in high school who still struggles understanding private and public acts, that's a big deal. So some of these core concepts, I might not then focus on, okay, who cares about contraception right now? Let's just focus on this huge behavior that is actually necessary for safety. And, you know, if there's a way, there are some initial assessments you can do to figure out, well, what do they know about this information? So all high schoolers could, or high school teachers, I mean, could give that initially and just say, okay, how much does your kid know? Talk to the family. How much do they know? And if they get the permission, can I teach them this content, then share the content with them. And ideally, you can collaborate with other health teachers or someone else who is approaching this with the rest of the students as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, it's just a tough position to be in. I'm envisioning. Yeah. Like, it would be great if we had that streamlined communication between schools, but, you know, it doesn't always happen.
It never happens. I mean, yeah. I thought when I like really started teaching sex ed, I was teaching adults. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very different world because these are people I wasn't bound by the school system. It was, you knew what class you were taking because you signed up for it. So all of these in the adult, I was 22 through, I think we had 58 or 59 was the oldest student in that first class. So
wow.
There were a lot of people who were interested, and it is a little easier in the adult world to be able to do that than in when you're in a school system. Because in the school system, there's just, yeah, the ideal is you would get this, you'd have a curriculum, but most people are worried about math and literacy,
yes,
and not sex ed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we get into, you know, we kind of talked earlier about how people tend to avoid this topic because it feels taboo or whatever. What if, as a special ed teacher, other staff members maybe disagree with you bringing this into the classroom?
Yeah. And if anyone's interested in doing this, that's listening, you will face that. I've gotten a lot of interesting discussions with people who are just, this is absolutely not something I'm interested in. I don't think we should teach it. It's okay that you as a staff member have different values. We mm-hmm. aren't here to actually teach others our value system. That's for parents. Parents teach kids their value system. My kids learn my value systems about this, and all of our students will learn their values from their families. So we aren't here to teach a value system. We are here to teach information, factual information. This is what happens when you do X, Y, or Z. So sexuality education is not something that a staff member can just decide to do on their own, because they're going to be talking about the sensitive materials. Like we said, every school district has some regulations in terms of how you talk about sexuality education, how it's addressed. What a special educator can do and should do is see how they can support the access to that information for their students. So that might be adapting some curriculum from the health teacher. It could be that if they don't have access to information, they're not able to make those choices and they're not able to participate in some of these discussions, you know, making sure that all kids in special education have options to join some of those. I forget what they're called. You know, every school calls them something different, but essentially like a health, like a mm-hmm. learn about puberty kind of class, like making yeah. sure that all kids are able to participate and you as a special educator can help convey that information. But I interact with staff members from all value systems all the time. I mean, I was in a training. I did a training recently where a staff member was just like, I do not believe that we should be teaching this. I don't believe in people with disabilities learning about this. And it was like, okay, that's all right. But the question is not whether or not you believe, because you're still tasked with providing information.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I'm not walking into a school to teach my value system. I'm just walking in to provide information or to facilitate access to information.
Oh my God. We need to like save that little clip. That's a great response. Like,
but also, and I will say also with that last thing is that I also like to appoint a primary staff person. So if this is happening, whether it's in a school, whether it's an organization, whatever it is, there's the primary person who's the go-to for this. So if a student asks a different staff member a question that would be in this realm, so it might be like, you know what, I was thinking about whatever, and I have these feelings when I look at so-and-so and da-da-da-da, the staff member can say, let's go talk to Sasha about it. Let's go talk yeah. to whoever that point person is. And maybe that point person is the one with the training and is able to give them that access. So it's helpful yeah. when there are staff members who don't want to be in the position to know that there's somebody else who's, hey, I'm good with this. Just send yeah. it to me.
And that might be some of the pushback that staff members give. You know, it's just, I don't know how to deal with it. Like, how, let's just not do it because I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how to answer those questions. So taking that, you know, pressure off might be helpful too.
Yeah. And it is awkward. I've had so many questions from that have made me blush, and I do this often, and I'll have questions and I'll just be like, oh, okay. Oh, fluster. But you just
take a minute.
But I also think every time that happens, I think, wow, I'm so glad that we are sitting and having this conversation, because I'm a safe person. Your parents, like, these are safe people for you to go and talk to.
True.
And I read this great article where essentially adults with disabilities were saying that they had to learn about relationships and intimacy from the TV show Friends and from the other magazines, yeah. Cosmopolitan. I mean, can you imagine those quizzes from Cosmo? That is what you're thinking is normal. I mean, so we have to remember, if someone wants the information, they're going to find it. So we want to make sure that we're giving accurate information in a really safe way.
Well, I mean, my mind is going to a lot of weird places right now, but beyond Friends and Cosmo, I mean, think of what the internet gives access to. You'll find those answers, and it may definitely be something not what you want your child or teenager to be consuming. No.
I mean, I worked with a adult who he essentially was like, he had a really different view of sexuality, sexual acts, because he had gone down a very dark rabbit hole in the interwebs that led him to just what is, and he was like, oh, this is what people do. And I had to finally say, most people don't do this.
Yeah,
it's fine if it's something you like, but this is not what most people do.
The use, yeah.
And it's awkward discussions, and you're trying to, and I would love to be able to avoid some of those by kids having more of this knowledge in high school, more of this knowledge leading to. So when we get to adulthood, we're not having to say, hey, let me tell you what this thing is, because now you've developed an idea of this concept that 70%, 80% of the population don't have a different response to it.
Well, also, I mean, I imagine this happens quite frequently with typically developing teenagers, that parents avoid the topic, they're just going to find videos online that might show them things a little different than what you would maybe want to teach. So,
and I think the difference is with those peers is often they're a little savvier at discriminating.
Mm-hmm. True.
What is, okay, this is what I really should be focusing on. I understand some of these societal rules and cues, whereas some of these students in special education do not read those cues. And then we start to have issues with the legal system.
Because I
feel like I told you this last time, I worked with individuals who just masturbated on the bus because someone taught them at one point that privacy was if someone can't see you, which is not what private is.
Yeah.
So, he was involved in the legal system, and that's just, we want to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah. You know, I had a similar, I used to work in special recreation, and this child, young man was taught that you could masturbate in a bathroom. And so he would masturbate in the public bathrooms at the park. Geez. And that, police were involved and parents were involved, and it got really tricky really quick. And I felt so bad for him because he was following the rules he was told. You know, he was told a bathroom, he went to the bathroom, and that's what he did. So, you have to think through everything so critically, because some of our students, kids are so black and white that we have to think through all those gray situations.
And if I had a nickel for every time someone said to me, well, the function's automatic, so don't we need to allow them to do this? Like, no, because that is where I think sometimes the behavioral science, I'm like, yes, that's true, but this is illegal.
So,
we can't teach people, there's a where and a when, and that's really important. That's what I mean about some of those gray behaviors. It's not just, yes, you can, no, you can't. It's, well, you can under these contexts and conditions.
Yeah.
That's what we're teaching them to look for.
Well, this is a good segue. So kind of getting into those interfering behaviors, to put it mildly, that, can happen in the classroom that are sexual in nature, especially junior high school transition teachers. What is your advice on approaching those? And I know it gets complicated very quickly. So for teachers that have that happening in their classroom, what is your kind of overall advice there without getting specific?
Yeah. Well, first, anyone who is about to address or you feel like you're in a position that you have to address a sexual behavior of concern, something that's sexual in nature, should determine if you have a scope of competence and confidence to address the issue. There's a great resource from Matt Broadhead. It's not about sexuality in general, but it's just about behavior analysts and interventionists. How are we intervening? And to make sure you actually have the skills to do this. So do you as a professional have the skills to do this work? Are you confident that you can do it? And if the answer is no to either one of those questions, who can you go to? How can you get more information? And in this article, Broadhead discusses some ways to increase your skills and confidence. But that's always my first place to go, because often, as an educator, you're faced with analyzing these types of behaviors, especially as kids grow. And there's always going to be one or two kids that are really fidgety, that are maybe engaging in some of these more sexual behaviors. And so you might feel confident in doing an initial analysis and initial observations and data, but not necessarily identifying some of those replacement behaviors. Or you might feel that you can identify the replacement behaviors, but you can't teach them. So there's some resources in this, but really where I land is that do some of those exercises, do some of those activities to determine, do you have the confidence in doing this? Do you have the skills to do this? And before you intervene, do those steps and then do some risk-benefit analysis to determine the risks of any intervention and the potential benefits of those interventions, and to make sure that there are skills that I'm sure you can teach or address, because often there are a subset of foundational skills, such as the concept of privacy, mm-hmm. that someone hasn't learned. So you can teach that. You might not be able to intervene directly on, for example, masturbation or touching others' privates. Maybe there's parts of that you feel nervous about, but there are, I'm sure, basic skills that you as an educator can address. So I always say it is something you have to be really careful on, because you never want to make a problem worse. So going back and just saying, do I have the confidence to do this? Do I feel like I have the skills? What are the benefits of this? What are the potential risks? Who can I reach out to for help for this? Those are good exercises to get you started. And then you can find out what you do feel good about teaching, because there will be stuff that you feel like you can do.
I think that's good advice in general. And that second piece is really important, that risk benefit. Because as you were talking, I was thinking through so many teachers that I work with, that there isn't a BCBA in the district, and there isn't maybe, especially in more rural areas, like there might not be someone to go to. And their quick answers to your questions of, are you confident? Do you feel comfortable? I'm gonna be like, heck no, I don't, but that behaviors that you kind of quite truly can't ignore, that, where can we start with things like privacy and accepting no, and things like and personal space, at least those things could have some benefit to the safety of the classroom and that child.
And there's a lot more resources now that I think are widely available. So if you say, hey, no, I don't have the skills for this, I don't have the confidence, there's self-education that's available. And again, if you get risk benefits, you're like, I think the benefit outweighs the risk here, and everyone agrees, then do that self-education, see what happens, try to bolster some of those foundational skills and see where you go. And if you need additional supports, also there's a lot of more virtual consultation, particularly in an area like this, that you can get.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. So kind of wrapping up, this is such a, I've learned so much from this conversation, so many great points, but what are some, in general, some kind of absolutes that you think every teacher should be working on with their student when it comes to this topic?
Well, I've already talked about privacy.
It's an important
biggest
one.
Thing. Every student needs to learn the difference between private and public. I have had so many students get in legal trouble because of what they do in public spaces. We talked about masturbation. It doesn't matter who you are. You can't do certain things in public. So learning private and public, and that can start young. That starts in elementary school. You close the door when you're in the bathroom. You don't pull your pants down. I see all these elementary school students who are like, I'm just going to, pull my pants down a little bit and show people my butt crack. No, we can start that early. It's silly, but we can really start that. And that's an easy thing for families to also work on at home. There's so many ways we can start modeling privacy. And so that's a huge one.
With that privacy one, not to interrupt you, I was just thinking as you're talking, I feel like staff members sometimes need to do a better job on teaching that too, especially in, some of them are self-contained rooms, kids that have toileting needs. I know people are short-staffed. I've been guilty of, maybe not maintaining privacy as much as I should for a student, just being short-staffed. But on making sure that all of our older students still have, and younger too, have dignity maintained and are in a bathroom without other kids that are visible and things like that. And I know that gets tricky if you have multiple students with toileting needs, but that's an important part of it too.
No, it's such a good point. Such a good point, because often what happens, and I've heard this. Have you heard this, that they're like, well, we can't close the door?
Yes. Like, that's what I was told as a first year teacher.
Me too.
I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah. They kept being like, for the first like 5 years, I'd be like, oh, well, we have to crack the door in the bathroom. I don't know what you guys are doing. And then another person who was just like, but why? And suddenly I was like, why are we doing this? But I was told that.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you're like, so everyone can watch the student in the most vulnerable position. I feel like if that happened to you as a staff member, when you actually think about also typical kids, can you imagine if we told every typical kid, oh, crack the door open so everyone sees you.
Yeah.
So we know what you're doing. It's absurd. So, and that still is maintained, I think, a lot, particularly in younger classrooms.
Yeah.
So that's a huge one. The second, I think, absolute is the importance of saying yes, no, and accepting a no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone needs to be able to express their consent to something. And that's consent to learning. That's consent to prompting. We had talked about that last time. And you need a way to say yes. And what's accepting a no is really hard for a lot of individuals. It's accepting alternatives. It's not enough to be able just to say yes, no. You need to be able to accept when someone's saying not now, no, thank you. And that, you know, and that really, especially now tying into consent, and we're much more aware as a society about that, that I think we need to embed it more into our special education classrooms. And the last few that I think are critical are, you know, everyone should be able to identify body parts. That's huge. Have basic hygiene and some sort of understanding of their body, that bodily autonomy, that their body belongs to them, and just some of that awareness, because that's going to lead to self-determination. That's going to help them be stronger advocates for themselves and will protect them later, not from, I mean, assault, but just protect them in general from if they want to be out of a space, if they don't like the way something is prompting, if they don't like the way they're learning, they're able to advocate for themselves. So I think that one's huge. I feel like those are my big ones.
Yeah, and those are big.
Again, like the context, I keep on repeating it because it's really learning those contextual cues of where you are to understand what you can engage in. I was recently talking to another teacher because this kid just like blurts out cuss words in class. And we were talking about it, and I was like, well, the problem is that this actually isn't bad. Like if he were at home saying this or on the, you know, at a park or whatever, people might not even bat an eye. Mm-hmm. You just can't blurt this out in the middle of class in this context. So how do you, you know, teaching those contextual cues when it comes to sexuality education is just huge. It's just everything. It ties into everything we do in terms of how we relate.
Oh my gosh, this was great. So many good pieces of advice, and I think really thought-provoking ideas on not just taking, I don't know, the easy way out's not the right phrase, but simply avoiding it is not going to, I think, be in line with most people's values when you really get down to it on our goals for independence and autonomy. So it was really useful for me to think about it in that way.
Well, you know, I love talking about this. I can talk about this all day.
I know. Keep going. Well, Rachel, where can people go to learn more from you?
Well, I work with the Watson Institute, so you can find me there. Email is rachels@thewatsoninstitute.org. We have resources on our website. I do some I have some information there that relates to sexuality education, that relates to, you know, again, masturbation, favorite topic, stuff like that, privacy. And yeah, if anyone's interested in more information, consultation, anything like that, this is a really hard topic, and it is one of those things that it's scary. And when I first started doing it, I was super scared, and I had a lot of very interesting moments where in the middle of class, I realized like, oh man, I didn't teach this foundational thing, and now no one knows what we're talking about. So I understand that it's a hard thing to do.
Well, thanks so much for joining us for a second time on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. so your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.